Okay, we do record these, and out of 154 of them, I actually had to go back and redo the PLC by myself because I forgot to turn the recorder on. So, but it hasn't been too often, too frequent. Well, Glow, thanks for the reminder. And do you want to give us any news that you may have heard?
Yeah, I don't really have anything new. I did talk to Rachel, which is our HMTRI's project officer at headquarters. She didn't really have anything new. She just had a couple of reminders. She wanted me to remind prospective applicants that you should have already be started on your proposals or at least get started now, that you need to work to get your employer commitments, get your labor market assessments complete and your community partnerships in place for the RFP to be released sometime this fall. Like Mike said, usually it's in November, but right now they're just saying fall. So that was all from headquarters. The only other thing from HMTRI for me is that we now have all of the meeting resources up on the Brownfields Toolbox website. So that would include all of the PowerPoints that were used for the presentations. A lot of the grantees sent in other resources besides just PowerPoints. The EPA PowerPoints that were used, the OSHA training PowerPoints, everything that we did at the grantee meeting this year is up on the Brownfields Toolbox. And that website is brownfields-toolbox.org. And it's right on the homepage. There's a gray box that talks about the grantee meeting, and then there's a link to the downloads page. And I've tried to organize it and title everything so that it's very easy to find. There's a folder for OSHA resources, one for grantee resources, one for NAEHS, one for HMTRI. I can't remember what the, one for the OSHA. And then each one of those should be labeled with the name of the organization or EPA office to which the PowerPoint belongs. So hopefully you can find what it is you're looking for. That's it for me, Mike.
That is really a really good resource, and I would encourage everyone to go to it. It's really almost a lot more than just the grantee meeting that we had. It has, of course, all the PowerPoints up there and the presentations, but there are a lot of resources like the federal program guide of all federal programs. It's about a 70-page document that may have anything to do with brownfields. There's a leveraging guide on how to leverage. That was, again, another EPA document. There's, of course, all of the EJ screen materials. So there's quite a bit, and actually, through the year, we'll probably be referring to a lot of those documents. They're great resource documents. The NIHS cost study is up there where they examine the cost effectiveness of worker training. So I would just go to that gray box and open it up and just kind of cherry pick some of those. And nice thing is you could download everything. So you could download the Federal Resource Guide, you could download the Leveraging Guide, you could download the NIHS study on cost effectiveness of worker training. So all of those things are there. So I would really encourage you to do that. What we thought we would do today is talk a little bit and get some feedback of any ideas or comments or lingering questions from the all grantee meeting. And then a couple of things to clear up that I know people had questions of, if we have time to do that. The meeting was a pretty good one. We had about 53 programs and PLC members. We had 14 regional people, 13 headquarters people, 88 people from grantees and PLCs. And as most of these meetings go, we had a lot of good networking and breaking out into sessions. And again, if you were not able to attend, the next best thing is to go to the to the Brownfields Toolbox site. The next session of the PLC, of course, will be September 28th, 2 weeks from now, where we'll get into the different components of job training so that you can start to prepare your program, or if you're a grantee now, perhaps upgrade what you're doing or relook at some of these different ideas. Before we get into the talk about the grantee meeting and might be questions about that, wanted to pass along some training opportunities. And we're going to put all of these into post-session notes. If for some reason you don't get post-session notes, drop me a line, msenyu@aol.com, and I'll make sure you're on the list. I think I have most everyone, but for some reason you don't get that, you could send either Glow or me a message to be added or subtracted from the list. We're going to have
all of the post-session notes, too, and the audio files are also on the Brownfields Toolbox website.
That's right.
So when you go to the homepage, if you click on the tab that says PLC Sessions, then you will see them listed by topic. So they would be in order, but if we have had a grantee do a presentation during that particular session, then it would be listed under that grantee's name. If it's like, for example, today's, where we're just going to do an overview of the grantee meeting, then the title would be something to do with that. So just so you know that all the past meeting notes are all on the Brownfields Toolbox.
We did have a question between the last PLC and now, and this was a question, how are people tracking their grant performance? Is there any software out there that's available? What can people use besides paper tracking and maybe Excel, which many of you may use? And we had a couple of responses. We had one from Ray Sullivan at the WIB, and he uses Salesforce, and he really likes that. He said you could track everything from prospective participants to what's happening through them, background on them. You keep all that information, the progress of the grant, and they use it quite a bit for several grants. And he really recommended Salesforce. And in the post-session notes, we'll put the link to them. Oh, someone put us on hold. That's unfortunate. We usually ask people not to put us on hold before we start. Please don't put us on hold. Thank you. That we like to keep these open, and the way this particular free conference call works is everyone's either on or off. You could probably mute your phone, but please don't put us on hold. That way it allows people to break into the conversation and ask a question as we go. There was another response in terms of the tracking programs, and Donna Dorsey also indicated a program from Social Solutions called ETO Software, and they use that. If anyone's got any ideas, you might drop us a line on that, on what you might use to do your tracking. Of course, a lot of people use Excel and just paper tracking. So one of the things, again, before we get into the meeting itself, were some training opportunities, and I'm going to put them in the post-session notes because they're quite lengthy. But these are sponsored by NIHS. There's three major programs going on, and we have included them because at the All Grantee Meeting, Glow indicated that we would give you first shot. All of the people associated with the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program would get a chance to hear about these programs early. And I'm going to explain a little bit about PEAT, NIHS, and CCHST. And this is a question that came up at the all-grantee meetings. What are these? Are they associated with the HMTRI? How they're associated? Is there some sort of an affiliation? And, of course, NIHS is the federal agency out of Department of Labor, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And they're like the EPA, but they have a charge of health and safety of the American public. And NIEHS, Environmental Health Science, has to do with the environmental health of the American public. And that's their overall mission. They have many, many programs. Within that, they provide grants to open to labor organizations and nonprofits. And an organization called PEAT, which is Partnership for Environmental Technology Education, applied for that amongst many organized labor organizations, including the AGC, carpenters, chemical workers, and the purpose of this grant that they've been applying for and receiving over the years, this has gone on as long as the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program, is to train workers on how to protect themselves when they go into an environment. How do they protect themselves from the hazards, which is different than what EPA is doing. EPA is concerned, of course, with the remediation. It's very important that the workers protect themselves, but they're primarily in remediation and control of the environment, but also the people that do that work, which we're quite involved in, have to be able to protect themselves. So this is why we do a lot of health and safety training. Again, if you've got a speakerphone, maybe just put it on mute, but not on hold. Okay. So that every 5 years, there's a re-up or a competition. Ours are every year in November. The NIHS program has a five-year span. They're much bigger grants, but they're recompeted every 5 years. And the last competition was this last year, and those grantees have received funding for the next 5 years. And one of those organizations is PEAT, the Partnership for Environmental Technology. And PEAT is supposed to be doing programs around the country to train environmental workers, primarily to train trainers who will train environmental workers. So they're trying to set up, they have a network, and they've been associated with this for quite a while. They have a network to train trainers, to train environmental workers to protect themselves around the country. Well, CCHST, and I'm kind of showing this hierarchy, which I'll put in the notes because it's complicated and people have questions about that. CCHST is the Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training. And this is basically an organization that's affiliated with HMTRI. And they are a subgrantee of PEAT. And what they do is they put on courses to train the trainer. And these trainers go out and train workers. And those workers, those trainers that are across the country, they have quite a few, maybe 100 members that are part of the consortia. And they get training from CCCHST to go out and train workers. And in turn, they report their numbers of the people they've trained, and that goes up to PEAT, which goes up to NIHS, and then to Congress. So it's kind of a pyramid that's going out. It's a much bigger program. You can see the difference between that and the Environmental Workforce Development Program, which is the Environmental Workforce Program goes directly to the trainer, to train workers, where you've got this large organization, which is NIHS. And many people wonder, how do I apply for funding? And this was a topic at the annual meeting. What other agencies could I apply to get funding for worker training? And many of our environmental worker grantees are also members of the CCHST consortia. And the question is, well, can I get in that consortia? And the answer is yes. And what I'm doing is eventually getting back to this notion of the training, that there's going to be training opportunities. And NIHS, through PEAT, through CCHST, has got three training programs going on between now and next summer. And I'm going to put the details of these training programs in the notes. And you can apply for those. And one is about the Greatest Institute. That happens next June. And it's a boot camp for learning how to be a trainer for things like 40-hour HAZWOPER, confined space, spill response, DOT hazmat, hazardous awareness. And the idea, if you go to this course, you're going to become a trainer. You're not going to get funding, but you're going to get, you become a trainer to train workers, and then you report your numbers up to through the NIHS network. The reason it's important, and many of our grantees are also members of the CCHSD consortia, is they've already got people in place and they got a mechanism, and it kind of goes side by side with what they're doing in the Environmental Workforce Program. They've got the trainers, they've got the systems, they've got the equipment, and they've got the facilities. So they could go, it's a short step for them to go and train people under the NIHS. They're totally different programs, as you see, as I've just explained, and it's a little confusing. Totally different type of environment. You're not going to get funds. You may get some funds for training, but you're not. It's not like a grant like you would get from EPA. So I'm going to explain those three programs in the notes rather than here, but they have one on the Greatest Institute. They have a disaster preparedness program going on in January. It's going to be in Florida. And then they have also a train-the-trainer program in October through May, several of those. And I'll put those out. And if you're interested, you can go to the attachments, fill them out, and contact the CCHS people, and they will get you in line for doing that. And that would essentially bring you into that worker training program, which is, again, different than what we're doing, but it has some similarities, and it could help you as there's some synergistic effects. Art is out in California as a member. Chris Litzau is a member. There's several members that have EPA grants that have NIHS, CCHST consortia, the consortium members. And the question that came up at the meeting was, is there a conflict that says, well, you can't do two federal programs the same? Well, these are really completely different. And basically, you're becoming a member of a train-the-trainer through the CCHST, which is a subgrantee of PEAT. So there's not any conflict. You just have to make sure you're working with separate groups and keeping that separation clear on what you're doing with environmental workforce development and what you're doing with the train-the-trainer program. So I just wanted to put that out there because we had a lot of questions and confusion about what is this organization, what's your involvement with them, and of course, our involvement, the HMTRI involvement, is that CCHST and HMTRI and the workforce program are handled out of the same same EICCD, the Eastern Iowa Community College District. So just to get that clear. Anyone have any questions on that? It's a little confusing to someone that's just coming into this program and wonders what NIHS is doing and what they're all about and can I get funding from them. Any questions about that? Okay. I want to turn to the all grantee meeting a little bit. What did you all think about that? And I guess the question is, do you have any unanswered questions about it or positive things or negative things or think you think we could do better at the meeting?
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Mm-hmm. I have a question that I believe was answered, but I think I just need a little bit clarity. This is Paul McFadden from the city of Rochester at Rochester, New York. Okay. And are you there still?
Yes. Oh, yes. We're all here.
And so my question is in regards to at the beginning phase for a procurement that has to take place with a bid for environmental contractors. We had pre-selected in our work plan because we identified who the environmental agency here in the city of Rochester would be. But we have to be able to open that up to a bidding process through our approval from city council and allow other vendors an opportunity to also bid on for it. So at the granting meeting in Virginia, I'm almost positive there was another way to go about it instead of having to just open it up through a bid and release it to the public and allow the public to bid on it. I believe that I heard that we can also do this through an electronic notification as well.
Okay. I'll address this a little bit, and if someone has something to add to that, they can do that. Jim Drummond was fortunate that they have that. He was the retired attorney for EPA. And
yes,
there's basically three forms of interaction. You could have a partner, a subgrantee, or a consultant, a private sector consultant. A partner, there's a partner, and they all may be partners. We have a nomenclature issue. if no money changes hands, you don't have any problems. You don't have to do anything. You're basically leveraging funds. And this partners often happen with the WIB. The WIB says, oh, we'll do some pre-screening for you. We're going to do, we could supply them with some bus fare. We could do equipment. We could provide them equipment. We could even screen your students. We could even place them. There's no money involved. We're just a partner of yours. And that's no sweat. And that's really good to put into. And you want to line that up before you even write your grant. In other words, we've partnered with the WIB. We've partnered with such and such church, this other nonprofit we've partnered. No money is going to be changing hands. They're going to be providing this. And we've got these in kind. It could even be a private sector. We're going to provide trainers, but it's in kind. We're going to even allow you to have some equipment, use our training sites, and we'll provide a trainer. But no money changes hands. So all you have to do is put that into your proposal, which you want to do. That's leveraging. Now you've got a subgrantee. Now we start to get tricky, both on your local level and on the federal level. As soon as money changes hands, now it gets trickier. A subgrantee basically is someone that you're going to do business with, but they may get a portion of the grant. They may be involved. They become a subgrantee. There may be funds exchanging hands. That subgrantee does not have to bid on anything, but he becomes your appendage, and everything that happens to you applies to him. And it's your responsibility to make sure that everything he does, if he bids out something, you give him some money and he bids out something, it's got to be under the same requirements as I'm going to talk about in a second. So that's the subgrantee is basically you, and you've got to administer that. And that may also have to go through your city council. But as far as EPA goes, while you don't have to bid for that, you could put that right into the grant proposal. You don't have to bid for that. Now we get down to the for-profit, the trainer, the consultant, and I'll even talk about grant writer, which cannot be handled through these funds. That now is something that has to be bid out. You need three bids. Now, if the person is already online and say you're a community college and they're doing work for you and you already similar work and you've already bid out, you did an RFP for a trainer and that trainer has bid and he's already your active trainer, you've got documentation that at some point in time you bid out three people and you picked the trainer that is doing your lead training and you like him and he's done a good job and you've already bid it out. He may be doing it on the credit side, that's okay. So you've done the active bidding. If, for example, you're starting fresh and yep. you're going to have three trainers, you got to go out and bid it out. Now, you could do this before you apply for your grant, and it's a very smart thing to do. In other words, what you could do is go out, and I expect your city council has the same requirements because they have to meet federal requirements. And what happens is you could go out now, before you even start writing the grant or thinking about it, go out to those three contractors, have them send an RFP, and we did a session about that, and I think we've got some example RFPs that we sent out. You could send out for a proposed trainer to do such and such training, and you could take those bids in, and you can bring them, you could accept one, and if you do it before you submit your grant, he's already online, you're okay. But the fact is you've got to have that contractor through the bid process. He's basically been vetted through the bid process, and now you select one of them or two of them or all three of them. It doesn't have to be the lowest bid. It just has to be, you need to justify, if you don't use the lowest bid, you know, why? Maybe the experience, maybe he is best known in town, maybe he's got the best personality, you feel he would be best for training. So you want to, if I were you and you're early and you don't wait till you get the grant, do it now. You could do your bidding, get the RFPs out, and get it in. And you could specify in the RFP that this is all contingent on you getting the grant and when you would likely get the grant. Does that make any sense to you?
It makes sense to me. My concern is if we've already been awarded the grant and we've already been able, we identified within the grant already, who we already identified the trainer already. For us, city council is saying, even though you all have already went out, did the research, and you looked at all the trainers, you still have to go through our city council process, which means you still have to open the bid out for other individuals.
They are correct. They are correct. Hi, this is Angela in Pastone in Rochester.
Hi, Angela. It's Paul.
Hi, Paul. The city council is correct. The feds will not say just because you identified somebody, you don't have to bid. You still have to put it out to bid. What
yeah.
you don't have to do, Paul, is you don't have to open it up to the public. You only have to procure 3 bids to meet the federal requirements or the city council requirements. But you can't just go with somebody you identified in the proposal.
So that's where I'm at now.
Yeah,
so,
and that's where the that's where the electronic thing comes in that you may have heard about. You could go out on the internet and send out a couple of RFPs to certain people, and then get some response and just put them in your file. Is that how you do it, Angela? Have you done it?
Well, we've been doing this federal bidding process for a long time, and we're multi-state, so we're real careful. But we always send out 4 to 5 RFPs because you have to have 3 return, okay? And, I mean, you can talk to those people and let them know they're coming and maybe people you've used before, whatever it is. But we found out a long time ago that just because you identify somebody in the proposal, you still have to go through the formal bidding procurement process. And you're right, you can just post them online, okay? But if you post it online, you may get a whole lot more proposals back than you want.
So,
and they may not be from people that meet your – be real careful that whatever you post, Paul, has all your requirements in it. Okay.
So we've been able to do that. But so the custom here for city government is there becomes a media announcement, public advertisement, and I'm saying, well, I don't think we really have to do all of that. I think we can just do this electronically and get 3 or more individuals to respond and then be able to submit that to city council that we did take that step.
Well, now you're dealing with a political issue. Meeting the federal requirements, you don't have to do the media and all of that other stuff. That's all the politics of city council, and all I have to say is better you than me.
Yeah, that's
right. As far as satisfying EPA, you're good to go. You can do it. And this is off the record, but if there's anyone out there that didn't do that, do it now. I would get that documentation and get it in your files. I think when Jim Drummond said, you know, this is off the record in Gulp, and I, you know, this is between us, but make sure you got something in your files that you do go out and as far as they're concerned, if it's training consultants and you get 5 training consultants in your area, and then Angela said, send them out an RFP and have them respond, you may be pleasantly surprised that the next round you may want to use someone else. So, you've got a good point. As far as your city goes now, you've got a whole nother bag of worms to deal with, which is not good. So is there someone out there on speakerphone? Maybe you could put us on, not on hold, put us on.
This is Kathleen Curry in Region 4. On that selection of instructor, you will have to follow your local requirements as well as meeting the federal. But what you can do is when you write up the RFQ, base it on what made you select the instructor that you put in your proposal.
Right.
then make it very tailored and custom to that instructor, where it'd be almost difficult for someone else who's applying be able to meet those specifications, such as personal knowledge of or personal interworkings with the organization, prior interworkings with the organization, experience in specific training, the way that is best, knowledge of your organization's style of delivery for training, that type of thing, where it would be very difficult for someone else to come in and be able to meet those qualifications. That's the best way to weed out anyone else.
And what it sounds like you're going to have to do locally is you're going to have to do, as Kathleen said, a very specific, but then turn it over to the city council procurement people, that very, very specific thing, and then let them do whatever they have to do.
Exactly. But always you have the final selection, decision, as long as you justify your decision. That's the main thing. If you have attorneys that you can go to look at your justification, where to meet legal boundaries?
I do.
Okay. Then you start writing up that justification even before you put out
the RFP.
The announcement, right. Because that way, when you can get your same instructor, make sure that they put in everything that they put in your original application or contract that you all agreed to.
And make sure, Paul, that the person that you've selected responds to the RFP.
Exactly. Thank you.
I know of grantees where the person who was sort of already targeted didn't respond because they didn't think they had to.
Very good.
Well, good.
I'm definitely not going to go that route. So for me, the advantage is that we have an all-inclusive one-stop training facility here that can meet all the components necessary to meet the grant, versus the other vendors who may do one or two of the components, but not all of the components.
Well, then you should be able to write that RFP pretty easily.
Right.
Make it very specific.
So what I would like to do, because what I'm up against is city council meetings, city council dates, and then the target dates to be able to start the training. And so if I go the long way with public announcements, media advertisement, and everything, I'm going to lose about 45 days. But if I can go ahead and just do the electronic way, then I'm down to only 14 days.
But you got to understand, is that allowable under the city charter? Will they allow that to occur that way?
So this is the first time that the city has received an EPA training grant specifically for this.
Right, I know.
Is that electronic a city? Do they have a city electronic program?
That's what I'm trying. Yeah.
Oh,
then
don't.
You can't do it.
You can't
you
do
have
it.
To, right. You have to
I
follow
think,
the requirement.
Let me correct it when I say no, because the city is broken down into bureaus, and there are some bureaus where the answer is no, but then there's a bureau where the answer is yes. But that's in regards to DJing for events, cake for events, nothing of this magnitude. But,
okay. Wait. Let me cut in, because we supposedly only have 30 minutes for this call. What you need to do is you need to find out, you say you have lawyers at your disposal.
Yep.
Find out exactly what the steps are. Then request of the attorneys to write for a waiver because of exigency of time, that this is a timed project and you have so much time in order to deliver, in order to be successful. Okay, if you don't have a certain amount of people trained within that first quarter, we start looking at you as not being successful. You understand? Sufficiently successful. So you have your attorney write up something, go to city council, and then see if they will allow that 45-day process rather than the other process based on the timeline that you're under. Two-year project must get started. First quarterly report is due, in January, something like that, I forget. So so that's what you need to do, is you go in and you ask for a waiver based on sound legal argument.
Okay.
Respectfully so. Because, and tell them, and always remember, these are politicals. You have to show where this will harm them if they delay the start of this workers' training process. You understand?
It supports
the communities, right?
Yeah, and you could demonstrate that you've met the federal requirements for competitive bidding, so
right.
That it's not an issue with feds. It's just an issue of expediency with city council, and they might
where you get the media involved, letting them know that hey, we got this shovel ready workers training project. However, the city is holding us up, which will give us less time to train people and to get them to work. So we're going into the city council meeting next Tuesday or whenever to see if they'll give us a waiver. Get the newspaper involved in it. The media involved that way. And again, all of this is off the record.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, and that's exactly right. I think that's really good advice. And the important thing from the federal point of view is if you've done the competitive bidding, the three bids, you've done it, I would think that they should be flexible enough that says, okay, you're good enough with the feds, you're good enough with us, you know, that just make sure that in your files you've got your three bids that you've done to satisfy the federal requirements, which is really key.
Along with a justification inside of the RFQ to go with it.
Right.
And
that time gives you another specificity that'll help you in terms of being very specific that this training has to start on such and such a date.
Mm-hmm. And you're held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Okay.
Right. But this is something that we should probably, Mike, in the future and GLOW, is write up something that, although is not required of the feds, you should look into your local procurement requirements ahead of time. So that way, if you have to do a pre-award procurement where you can have all, announced all of that and everything and saying based on the outcome of this, so you have all your working in two different agencies now, and I'm losing my industry vocabulary, but where you'll have all of your people responding that want to be involved in your project, you'll already have them on board and say that interviews will not be held until we get official notification of the award. And then if you don't get it, you just put in an announcement that unfortunately the organization didn't get it. So, but we'll keep your resumes or your organizational portfolios on file because we do intend to reapply, and then you'll be ahead of the game.
This is a great piece of mentoring for prospective grantees or re-ups that are thinking of bringing someone on board. Do it now. Get your ducks lined up. But find out if you're subject to city council regs, which is
exactly
right.
And then you take those steps before you even start, before you submit your final paper response to our RFA. And you'll have all that ready and documented for both the feds and for the local requirements.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.